It is 26 minutes after the hour, and it's not Thursday. This is Monday, and Robbie,
are we sure?
Well, no. I'm going to think tomorrow is Friday. Now, sure. Pastor Robbie, I didn't know that the monastery lets you out on Mondays. Normally, that's Robbie right. would be hoeing in the kale patch on Mondays, but instead they let him loose to talk on the radio. But we're glad.
Thanks for having me on, Jim and David. Good to be with y'all. Sorry to mess up your schedule. It is not Thursday. It is actually a Monday.
Okay, it is. It is.
Okay.
And the reason is, I know you're traveling this week. You're gonna head out west to a wedding for family. I think that's a super thing. But what's not so super is you came down with COVID last week. Right after, just about the same time you talked with us, and we're both gonna wear masks here.
That's right. Wear masks while you're on the radio, so you don't get it.
Well, you can't be too careful, you know.
Yeah, I was teasing that, you know, the virus slipped through the cracks in the broken road last Thursday.
Yeah, it could happen. It could happen.
You can still hear it in my voice a little bit. I was preaching on Romans 12, and Paul says, "Abhor what is evil." And man, I think this virus is evil.
Yeah,
I mean, it beat me up.
Did you? We talked, you know, last week. We talked about the Matthew 18 passage, and that wasn't the subject of your sermon the next couple of days.
It was. It was actually the gospel reading.
Okay,
we've been focusing in our lectionary. It's been pairing Romans with Matthew's gospel. And so I ended with Matthew's gospel because Romans 12 is how we're to treat one another as God's church.
Okay.
And Paul's got a little bit of a litany of things that we should do at the end and how we're not to repay evil with evil, but overcome evil with good. And then, of course, Jesus tells us how to deal with conflict in Matthew 18. And that's exactly what we talked about last week. In preparation for my sermon.
Doesn't he also talk about not going to court? We were talking about two witnesses and how a matter is confirmed, but he was also applying that to internal church difficulties. And when a brother has something against you, don't take him to a court of law. Deal with it in the church.
Yeah, exactly. Paul picks up on that in Corinthians when he talks about lawsuits and how brothers are not to bring lawsuits against each other. And you could make the argument that, hey, Paul must have gotten into a conversation with Matthew, the tax collector.
Yeah. Well, there's been some news breaking here in archaeological circles about the steps that lead down to the Pool of Siloam. And you emailed me a link to the Biblical Archaeology page. I can never say that. Biblical Archaeology, archaeological page, and had pictures. Now, have they uncovered all those steps? I mean, are they all the way down to where the pool was? Because for much of history, that was an unknown. People suspected it didn't even exist.
Yeah, I mean, this is the beautiful thing about this particular archaeological site is it was uncovered in 2004. That's not a long time ago.
Mm-mm.
It's been buried. I mean, this is a 2,000-year-old pool. And what's beneath it is actually Hezekiah's pool, which Hezekiah built in 700 BC. And so you can actually see this and Kings, you can read about these waterworks when Hezekiah was fortifying the city against.
Now, is this the pool that comes from the Gihon Springs outside the city of Jerusalem? So there's water that bubbles up naturally out there, and they simply rerouted it into the city and the Pool of Siloam. And in Scripture, it talks about people seeking healing there. Does it not?
It does, and this dates back all the way to David sieging the Jebusite city through the water tunnel. And he does that at the Gihon Springs, and there's this water tower he ascends.
Well, wait a second. I know there was a water course that was constructed that far back under the Jebusites?
Absolutely. I mean, this spring has been running since the time of David, and it's actually near the excavations in the old city of David in the south of the temple steps, the southern steps of the temple. About a half mile is the ascension from the Pool of Siloam up to the Temple Mount. But of course, in the days of David, the Temple Mount did not exist. It was the threshing floor of Araunah the Jebusite. And of course, the Gihun Springs there, the waterworks were there as long as, you know, 900 BC in the days of David. And then you see Hezekiah tunneling in the Gihun Springs into the city. You can see it in 2 Chronicles 32, 2 through 4. It says, when Hezekiah saw that Sennacherib had invaded and intended to attack Jerusalem, he consulted with his advisors and military officers about stopping up the springs outside
this,
the city.
This was an attack from Egypt.
Right. Sennacherib invaded. And then there was also risk, too, of the Babylonians, because Assyria had sieged the north 722. And we know the city finally falls to the Babylonians in 586 BC. So he consults with his advisors and the military officers about stopping up the springs outside the city. And they supported him, and a large number of people gathered together and stopped up the springs, and the stream flowed through the district. And they reasoned, why should the kings of Assyria come and find plenty of water?
I was wrong. So Sennacherib was Assyrian, right?
Yeah, they don't want to give their enemies water. And this is echoed in 2 Kings 20:20. That the rest of the events of Hezekiah's reign and all his accomplishments, including how he built the pool and the conduit, this is Hezekiah's tunnel. This is a 2,700-year-old tunnel that you can walk through today, carved through a solid limestone, and even had a plaque there that the workers had carved, and that's sitting in a museum today. But they sent teams, one from one side of the Ophel, or the old city of David, and another team from the other side. Is quite the engineering feat, and they tunneled towards one another and brought this water into the city and built this pool.
They found the two teams found each other underground, so I mean, so that the whole thing could be completed. That back then they still did amazing feats of engineering that hold water today.
That's right. Pardon the pun, right? It certainly does hold water. I mean, I've walked through it, and what excited me about this most recent coverage from Fox News is that they're continuing the excavation. So this pool is the size of two Olympic swimming pools, about the size of a football field. And it was actually the mikveh, the ceremonial washing bath for the hundreds of thousands of pilgrims that would come to Jerusalem to offer sacrifice up on the Temple Mount.
But there's a series of smaller mikvahs there as well, so the same water source probably for those.
On the southern steps.
Yes.
So there are more waterworks coming from the north. I mean, this is where you get two pools that are unique and uniquely mentioned in John's gospel. One's the pool of Bethesda, or Bethsaida, in John 5. The other one is the pool of Siloam, which we're talking about in John 9. These two pools were actually used by skeptics to discredit the gospel of John, which was written around 90 AD, because when people would read the uniqueness of the account of Jesus healing the man at Bethesda or Bethsaida at the north, and Siloam, the blind man, in the south. One of the pools, the one in the north, has five porticos. And the skeptics would say, well, this isn't mentioned in any other gospel, number one. Number two, this archaeological, or this architectural, I should say, design of five porches doesn't exist in Jerusalem. And so when the archaeology digs up the architecture and it validates what the scripture says when the pool of Bethesda is discovered, well, now it's actually validating the scripture. Same thing with the pool of Siloam, because when this is dug up in 2004, there's a smaller pool at the end of Hezekiah's tunnel that most people believe, oh, that's the little pool of Siloam where Jesus sent the blind man. Well, as a matter of fact, in 2004, when the sewage pipe burst and they were doing this repair work and they discovered these steps, what they discovered was the Pool of Siloam had steps on all four sides. and that this was a mikveh. And one of the critiques of the Bible and Judaism, some of the people were saying certainly hundreds of thousands of pilgrims could not have possibly come to Jerusalem, because on the southern steps the mikveh are so few, and those mikveh were probably fed through northern water tunnels, maybe even from Bethesda, the two pools. There's actually two pools in the north. And this is Hezekiah's work too. Hezekiah builds a dam in a wadi, a drainage in the north near the Sheep Gate. And then when Herod the Great rebuilds the Temple Mount, he adds another dam and creates two pools, and then they build porticos. So the northern pool has been there since the days of Hezekiah, and the first dam is actually the middle portico. It was a road that was built across there, a dam and a road, and then Herod the Great expanded it, and those two have steps inside of them near St. Anne's Church. You can actually visit there near the Lion's Gate in the old city of Jerusalem. And you can go there and see the steps down into the southern pool. You can see the dam with the valves. And a lot of this water that's collected in the north is piped down to the southern steps and the smaller mikvah's there.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that Siloam has its own spring feeding it, and that's the Gihon spring.
Well, Herod was known as a tremendous builder, and we cover a lot of his projects in some of the streaming video from Preserving Bible Times. Was he responsible then for constructing the version of the Pool of Siloam that hosted Jesus and the blind man?
Yeah, and this is what excites me, because I've been there, and it's one length of the smaller edge of the pool, and it's the northern edge, the one closest to the southern steps mm-hmm. of the Temple Mount. And you can walk down in it, but it's not excavated to the bottom of the pool. And not only that, but there's private land to the south that the Israeli Antiquities Authority cannot excavate and did not since 2004. So we're talking almost two decades. They haven't excavated further since the repair of the sewage pipe. What excites me in the Fox News coverage when they're interviewing one of the people from the city of David, what I've seen in that footage is they've increased the excavations down to the bottom of the pool. So this hasn't been seen the light of day in 2,000 years. And what's even more exciting is if they excavate this entire pool, this is where Jesus walked. This is where the blind man was sent. This is the pool. And in Siloam, the pool means sent. So Jesus sends the man to a pool called Sent. And beneath that pool, should they decide to keep excavating, is the pool that Hezekiah had built, unless, of course, Herod the Great dug down further, and that is a possibility that he dug down, even excavating out the previous pool and creating the Pool of Siloam on top of it.
Yeah, I wonder if in those days he would have had respect for the relics of ages past. Probably not Herod. That doesn't sound like Herod.
No, that guy's making his own mark. He's not trying to preserve the past. Yeah, Herod the Great. You know, it's been said safer to be one of Herod's wives than his pigs, or his pigs than his wife. You know, yeah. Jews aren't supposed to eat pork, but he was slaughtering his family. You know, but he would just assume eat the pig as well. Herod the Great was Jewish, like Olive Garden is Italian.
Yeah.
You know, so he's not really concerned about preserving these things.
Well, he must have been concerned if the Pool of Siloam was used for cleansing. There had to be an outlet, because it's got to be moving water, living That's water, right. They would say, to serve that capacity. Does anybody know where that outlet might be? I guess that's on the private land, probably.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is the fun. This is the fun thing about archaeology.
I'm thinking that there was a water system in the temple. They had to dispose of animal remains and blood and tissue and rinse all that out of the temple. There were, I know, thousands of Levites that serviced that kept it clean and did all the grunt work, but there had to be water coming out of that area down into the Kidron Valley.
Well, the fun thing is when I was in Jerusalem. In 2015, I went and did a special tour at night on the Western Wall tunnels. And what we did was we went down near the Wailing Wall, down into the Western Wall tunnels, and we tunneled past, there's a tunnel down there, and it goes past the Holy of Holies, the closest place where you can get to the Holy of Holies. There's a little chapel down there. Mm-hmm. And if you keep heading north to the northwestern corner of the old city walls, there's cisterns there now full of water. It's amazing. You're underground. There are these underground reservoirs near the Antonia Fortress, and this water, I believe, is coming from Hezekiah's dam that he built there at the Pool of Bethesda from the southern pool. So there's the northern pool that was created. Herod the Great added another dam south of there to create the southern pool. There's stairs in there as a mikvah. And as you mentioned, that water has to keep going. But you don't waste the water. You hold it as much as you can. So even if it flows out, you're taking that outflow of water and you're storing it in cisterns because water is valuable. Mm-hmm. You don't want to waste any of it. So you can go under the city, even today, where archaeologists have tunneled, and you can see these holding tanks. And Herod the Great had them. He had them in his mountaintop fortress of the Herodium. Mm-hmm. He had cisterns, of course, of Caesarea Maritime. He had aqueducts there as well as cisterns. And he had them at Masada. And these cisterns are so vast.
There are pictures of those in that streaming video, which I would recommend to people. It's called Two Crowns, and it's free. You don't have to pay to see it. You can go to the free material on preservingbibletimes.org and take a look. It's, I think, about a half an hour, I think, is that.
That's a great program, and it emphasizes Herod's architecture, his building projects. And both, it juxtaposes, compares, and contrasts King Jesus with King Herod. Because it's funny, we can go to these things that King Herod has built, but we can't really go to anything that Jesus, quote, built, and I'm putting that air quotes there, while he was living on earth. But King Jesus is the author and architect and the builder of all things. He's the creator of the universe. So we're looking for that city whose architect and builder is God, the author of Hebrews says. And so Jesus is the greater builder, the tecton or stonemason. So yeah, Herod, you know, expands the Pool of Siloam, that pool to incorporate the pilgrims for purification. We know it's a mikvah because it has stairs all the way around it. There's also a purified a street for the purified pilgrims going up to the Temple Mount. It's a half a mile long from the Pool of Siloam to the southwest corner. This half a mile road, you can walk it in a tunnel underground. So you can walk this tunnel and see these steps from the first century in the time of Jesus. And most likely this blind man would have tapped his way down to the Pool of Siloam there.
I just put the link to the Two Crowns video in the chat window at Broken Road Radio because it's a free streaming video. You can click on that. It'll take you to the presentation at Preserving Bible Times, and you can give it a look. There's like four segments to it, so you can look at short segments, but it'll go over some of the amazing things that Herod built. From Caesarea down to Masada and Herodium and his palace, and you get a good look at the Jerusalem model too, and you get an idea of kind of the layout of old Jerusalem there. So I recommend that. Robbie, I know you're a big fan of archaeology. You turned me onto the biblical. There's that word again. Biblical archaeological site. And
Biblical Archaeology Review.
Yes, that
magazine,
one.
Magazine and excellent. The website. And I highly recommend those websites because they have free PDF books on the archaeology of Jerusalem that you can subscribe to their email list and get free books from them in PDF format. And they have diagrams of all of this. And you can look at it and kind of do a virtual tour from the archaeologist's drawings of these things. So Herod builds and expands on these particular sites to expand the Temple Mount. Again, he's trying to appease the Jews. So this is the political context. There's the religious context in that these things are mikvah, so people are purifying themselves to be able to offer sacrifices to God. Herod expands the Temple Mount complex. He expands the temple. All of this is done, and all of this is kind of the context of Jesus showing up on the scene with this corrupt temple system where there's this enmeshment between religion and politics. And I'm so glad we don't have that today, right? An enmeshment between religion and politics. But in the time of Jesus, I mean, this was intense. And he called it his father's house. This is my father's house. It's to be a house of prayer, but you've made it a den of thieves. This is why he overturns the money tables of the money changers, because he's angry about the syncretism of the politic and the religion. And we've got the proximities of these sites. We've got the geography of these sites. We've got now the archaeology of these sites. So I love what one of the things that's mentioned in these videos of this latest unearthing of Siloam, the person being interviewed says, it's not a matter of faith, it's a matter of fact. And you can see the fact.
Well, 150 years ago, it was a matter of faith because we had the Bible. We didn't have the scientific evidence that the Bible suggests is there. And I remember Doug Greenwald, who's the founder of Preserving Bible Times, used to talk about a German archaeologist who named 100 sites in the Bible that no one had ever found. And he said, at some point in the future, if all these 100 places are verified, there will be no doubt about the historicity of the Bible. And between then and now, almost all of them have been found to be exactly where and exactly what the Bible describes. And we can add the Pool of Siloam to that now.
Yeah. Or they found it, or they thought they found it, and then they find the real thing and they realize, oh, this is the light this sheds on the passage.
Yeah.
All of this biblical truth is verified through the physical, scientific, archaeological record. And case in points, like Hazor in the north, when the archaeologists dug that up, they didn't know what it was. When they found a burn layer, it actually coincided with a city that Joshua burned in the days of the conquering and the settling of the land in the days of Joshua and Judges. So that was an opportunity of the Bible giving voice to the actual site, the archaeological site. So they didn't know what that city was, and so the Bible gave them the answer. Most of the time, it's the Bible that people are looking for these scientific cities, and you can see them in the Bible. But here, they didn't know what the city was. They didn't have a name for it, and the Bible gave it to them.
Now, it's also interesting. I don't want to take too much time from you today, but knowing how nature has treated that part of the world with earthquakes and storms and famines and pestilence over the years, comparing that with the archaeological record, for example, Jericho, they found the original walls that did in fact crumble. Somehow, in a very short period of time, they were down and gone. All this information about what is given to us in both the Old and New Testament is turning out to be historic fact. And it makes all this just so fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I would encourage your folks to go over to Biblical Archaeology Review and check out their website. And once you go there, look up Jerusalem Archaeology, History and Apologetic. It's a free ebook, and it shows, there's probably 70 different sites that are illustrated that the archaeology has discovered, including the old city of David, the Ophel, the things that we've been talking about from 1000 BC, the Gihon Springs, the threshing floor of Araunah the Jebusite, the Temple Mount, and the pools of Bethesda, and the old city walls, and Hezekiah's tunnel. All of this is illustrated in Jerusalem archaeology, history, and apologetic proof. Mm-hmm. From biblical archaeology.
It's all real, folks. And Robbie also put a link in the chat window to a piece that Doug Greenwald prepared about, it's called Because Context Matters. If you wonder why all this is of such consuming interest, you might want to just read that. It takes you a minute to read there and understand the different facets of context and why it teaches us, shows to us what happened between the lines of the Bible. It's all important stuff, and preservingbibletimes.org is a great website to be acquainted with, too. I mentioned Robbie's monastery. It is not really part of a monastery, but he's an Anglican pastor, and he wears a collar from time to time, and that's pretty close. Anglican pastor and executive director of Preserving Bible Times. So, Robbie, again, we thank you. I'm glad you came to us on Monday. We'll miss you later in the week, but have a good trip and a joyous occasion at the wedding, and we'll see you the week after.
Next week. Thanks for stopping in.
Yeah.
Joy and a privilege to be with you, gentlemen. Thank you for having me on The Broken Road.
Thanks,
Robbie. Pleasure as always.